Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Not One Inch, America, Russia, and the Making of Post-Cold War Stalemate by Emmy Cerotti. Narrated by Terry Schnaubelt. Ennus tekainatois palai tekmairitai. A man of sense judges the new events by the past. Sophocles, Oedipus Rex, 916. Note on names and places. This book's reliance on evidence in languages other than English creates challenges in spelling proper nouns in the main text. In the interest of producing a clearly written English language account, I have adopted anglicized versions of frequently cited place names, such as Pristina for Pristine or Pristina, and Visegrad for Visegrad. I also refer to East Germany and West Germany, although those exact names are relatively infrequent in the original German language sources from the Cold War. Those sources generally refer to the eastern half of the divided country by its formal name, the German Democratic Republic, or GDR, and to the western half as the Federal Republic of Germany, or FRG. I also use East Berlin for the capital of East Germany, although the ruling regime generally called its half of the divided city Berlin. A further complication arises from the fact that, after unification on October 3, 1990, newly reunited Germany kept the former West German name, so references to the FRG after that date describe the united country. With regard to individuals, I have tried to provide names in the original spelling where feasible, that is, if there are no common English equivalents and the original is not in a different alphabet. Contests over borders create further complications. After Ukraine's December 1, 1991 vote to break away from the Soviet Union, this book switches the spelling of the capital city from Kiev to the version preferred by the newly independent state, Kiev. Another contested issue was the status of the three Baltic countries during the Soviet era. Neither they nor the United States, among other countries, recognized their incorporation into the USSR. Moscow dominated the Baltics, nonetheless, and they were commonly shown as part of the Soviet Union on maps. Bearing the non-recognition in mind, this book follows the convention of showing the Baltics as part of the USSR after their incorporation. Introduction. Foreclosing options. It is the hallmark of any deep truth that its negation is also a deep truth. Max Delbruck. Not One Inch. The fight over Europe's future beyond the Cold War entered its decisive phase with these words, spoken in February 1990 by the American Secretary of State James Baker to the leader of the Soviet Union, Mikhail Gorbachev. The Berlin Wall's collapse on November 9, 1989, had by then gravely weakened Moscow's grip on Central Europe. But thanks to the Soviet victory over the Nazis in World War II, decades later, Moscow still had hundreds of thousands of troops in East Germany and the legal rights to keep them there. To convince Gorbachev to relinquish this military and legal might, Baker uttered the words as a hypothetical bargain. What if you let your part of Germany go, and we agree that NATO will not shift one inch eastward from its present position? A controversy erupted over this exchange almost immediately, at first behind closed doors and then publicly. But more important was the decade to follow, when these three words took on far-reaching new meanings. Gorbachev did let his part of Germany go, but along the way, Washington rethought its options, not least after the Soviet Union's collapse in December 1991. The United States realized it could not only win big, but win bigger. Not one inch of territory need be off limits to NATO. Washington could lead the alliance in opening a path for large numbers of eager new members to join. In the 1990s, it did just that, resulting by March 12, 1999, in enlargement across Central and Eastern Europe and to the Polish-Russian border. But on December 31st of that year, Vladimir Putin rose to the top in Moscow. As NATO kept expanding, he ultimately decided to use violence in an effort to ensure that not one inch more of territory would join. The game of moving by inches resulted in a stalemate. Between the fall of the wall and the rise of Putin, animosity between Moscow and Washington over NATO's future became central to the making of a post-Cold War political order that looked much like its Cold War predecessor, and to the unmaking of hopes for cooperation from Vancouver to Vladivostok. To show how and why, this book examines the conflict between Russia and America against the backdrop of the sprawling, unpredictable landscape of the 1990s. That decade witnessed the astonishing overnight collapse of an empire, yielding a host of new Eurasian states, produced visionary leaders, some rising from prisons to presidencies, earning Nobel Prizes and global admiration, and redefined the realm of the possible for democratization, disarmament, market economies, and the tenets of liberal international order. But it also opened the door to new expressions of authoritarianism, de-democratization, and ethnic cleansing. Telling the unruly history of the 90s as a narrative is hard but necessary. Without a story to follow, the odds of getting from the beginning to the end of the list of actors, concepts, and locales approaches zero. This book uses the fight over NATO expansion as its through line. It tells the story not of the alliance itself, but of the strategic choices that American and Russian leaders made during their decade-long conflict over the start of its enlargement to Central and Eastern Europe, and of the cumulative weight of those choices on today's world. The book begins with a focus on the 1989 contest over the future of divided Germany, which, for Washington, swiftly turned into a struggle to preserve the Atlantic Alliance. Then, widening its field of view, the book examines how American success produced opportunities for the courageous leaders of new European democracies, but also challenges for the West's relationship with former Soviet republics, most notably for Western efforts to cure, as one American defense secretary memorably put it, their nuclear hangover. Widening still more, the book shows how the way expansion was implemented brought a loss of options for 21st century transatlantic relations. Throughout, the book asks how and why U.S. Presidents George H.W. Bush and Bill Clinton, together with their European contemporaries, Tony Blair, Jacques Chirac, Václav Havel, Helmut Kohl, John Major, François Mitterrand, Gerhard Schroeder, Margaret Thatcher, and Lech Walesa, plus Baltic leaders and NATO Secretaries General Manfred Werner and Javier Solana, launched the enlargement that eventually took the alliance to 30 nations. This accomplishment represented a major success for American strategists. It saved many, though not all, of the new post-Cold War democracies from life in a security gray zone between East and West. With Washington's help, over 100 million Central and Eastern Europeans enjoyed well-deserved success in their efforts to become NATO allies. And as it enlarged, the alliance helped to quell bloody conflicts in the Balkans. Today, NATO stretches from North America, Iceland and Greenland, to the United Kingdom, Europe and the Baltics, covering nearly a billion people. Its members all possess the so-called Article 5 guarantee, a promise rooted in the alliance's founding treaty. An armed attack against one or more of them shall be considered an attack against them all. Since gaining that guarantee, the new members of the alliance have indeed remained free from large-scale armed attacks, even as fighting began across some former Soviet borders. American military might and its deterrent power remain the cornerstone of the alliance's strength. Yet success came at a price. It is no small thing to guarantee the security of a billion people. In the 1990s, two American presidents were so focused on achieving the eastward extension of Article 5 that they did not sufficiently consider the consequences of how they achieved that goal. As President Bush said in response to the idea that
Sample complete. Ready to continue?